Okay, we'll get started. We have a distinguished panel here today. The gentleman closest to me is Ed Berger. Ed Berger is Associate Director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. He is a graduate of Indiana University, holds an MLS from Rutgers, and has written widely on jazz discography and research methods. His publications include Benny Carter, A Life in American Music, Reminiscing in Tempo, The Life and Times of a Jazz Hustler, which is a bio-discography of record producer Teddy Riek, and Basically Speaking, An Oral History of George Duvivier. He is a contributing writer for Jazz Times and co-editor of the annual Review of Jazz Studies, to which he has contributed many articles and reviews. As a record producer, Berger's projects include two Grammy-winning releases. He has also programmed and annotated historical reissue recordings for Time Life Records, the Franklin Mint, the Smithsonian, Verve, and Blue Note. He has also been active as a broadcaster and lecturer. Ed enjoyed a long association with multi-instrumentalist arranger-composer Benny Carter. He served as Carter's road manager for many tours, including a dozen visits to the Far East. He also produced most of Carter's recordings from the mid-1980s. Ed has taught jazz history at Rutgers, has given courses for jazz at Lincoln Center's Swing University, and during his 3 decades at the Institute of Jazz Studies, he has produced and co-produced many public events, including concerts, lectures, exhibits, and conferences. In 2008, he was honored by the New Jersey Jazz Society for his service to jazz. The gentleman using the term loosely in the middle is Vinny Pilote. Vinny is the head of technical services and a sound archivist at the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, Newark campus. He has compiled discographies on Billie Holiday, Lionel Hampton, and the Commodore record label, and has written a number of LP and CD liner notes. Vinny is one of the contributors to the Oxford Companion to Jazz, and he is executive producer of one of the hosts of the radio program Jazz from the Archives on WBGO-FM, National Public Radio in Newark. He is also a frequent contributor to the ARSC Journal and is the incoming president of ARSC. Condolences may be sent to him, care of this hotel.
And flowers, too. We'll find out what his room is. Yeah.
And the gentleman on the end is Seth Winter.
Egad.
What else you want to know?
You don't.
Well, here it is. Seth B. Winter has been president of Seth B. Winter Sound Studios since its inception in 1990. His studio has done remastering projects for such associations as the New York Philharmonic, the Minnesota Orchestra, the Metropolitan Opera, Sony BMG, Pavilion Records Limited, Crystal, and Stash Records. As a result, he has been awarded 3 Grammy nominations and 1 honorable mention from NARIS. From 1996 to 2004, he was co-chair of ARSC Technical Committee with some guy named Galo, as well as a contributor to the CLIR Technical Report concerning analog identification, conservation, and preservation. In addition, he has been a sound engineer at the New York Public Library for over 20 years. In that capacity, he has been the preservation engineer of various sound collections that belong to the National Orchestral Association, the Little Orchestra Society, Roberta Peters, Henry Cowell, Vincent Persichetti, The Voice of America, Otto Luening, and UB Blake. He has also been the technical curator of the famed Toscanini collection since 1988. Recently, he has done or is in the process of preserving and or remastering the collections of Cy Walter Archives, the Bach Aria Group, Mark Laycock's performances with the Princeton Symphony Orchestra, the Schnabel Family Foundation, and a 4-CD package devoted to UC Burling's American radio broadcast being published by the American UC Burling Society. A presentation concerning that issue will be presented later today. Since 1995, he and Mr. Galo have formed a subcommittee to locate the best pastrami sandwich in the metro New York City area since the demise of their favorite deli in Brooklyn that year. Updates will be available during this conference and after Mr. Galo's visit to New York City in July. Without further ado, Hidden Gems, Preserving the Benny Carter and Benny Goodman Collections. Let's give a warm welcome to our guests.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to start things off and give a brief overview of the project that we're involved in, and then turn it over to my esteemed colleagues, and then they're going to discuss some of the technical aspects and play some of the Benny Goodman gems, and then they'll turn it back to me, and I'll play some of the things we found in the Benny Carter collection. I have to say it's a very hard act to follow who was sitting on this podium a few minutes ago. And not only are they more experienced in music and have more tales to tell, but they're actually probably move better than we do, too. And they're over 90, most anyway. Last year, the Institute of Jazz Studies received a grant from the Andrew Mellon Foundation to digitize these two sets of recordings, the Benny Carter and Benny Goodman collections. We had submitted a long list of sound recordings that we had, different collections in our archives, and they said they were most attracted to the Benny Carter and Benny Goodman, so we think they might have a great attraction for Benny's. So next year we're going to apply for Benny Golson, Benny Payne, Benny Powell. I think we're going to hit them, you know, while the iron is hot, as they say. Jack Benny, right. Benny Hanna, you know. So, so anyway, to get started, I'm going to try and keep the talk to a minimum so we can get in as much music as possible. The Benny Carter collection comprises Benny Carter's personal archive and has many unique performances, interviews, and other documentation of Carter's professional life. Many of these tapes and discs were donated by Benny Carter to the Institute of Jazz Studies during his lifetime, and the remainder were donated by his wife, Hilma, shortly after Carter's death in 2003. They total about 742 hours of playing time on cassette, reel-to-reel, and lacquer discs. The Goodman collection is entirely reel-to-reel tapes compiled by Goodman biodiscographer D. Russell Connor for over four decades. And as a friend and confidant to Benny Goodman, Connor had access to his personal collection as well as those of many Goodman researchers and collectors worldwide. So the basic work plan involves us at IJS going through the two collections and identifying the material for digitization and doing some initial content analysis. And then the tapes are sent to the outside engineers, of which Seth Winter is one. Duke Marcos, who's not here today, is the other. And they return it to us in multiple CD and hard drive storage formats. So it's really been very exciting to go through these collections because on an almost daily basis, we're coming up with, you know, undiscovered, unknown treasures. When completed, the project should provide researchers with new insights into the career of two of jazz's greatest instrumentalists and band leaders, and should appeal to people in many other fields, not just jazz history, because Carter's and Goodman's careers intersected with many other important figures and traversed so many varied areas of American culture, including race relations, the film industry, recording studios, radio and television, the academy, and even international diplomacy. So this material should serve as a primary resource for a wide range of researchers. So I'm going to turn it over to our colleagues. They're both very reticent, as you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to, I just hope they're so shy that we can get something out of them, but I'm going to turn it over to Seth and Vinny.
Go ahead.
No, you take it.
I'll take it to start.
Yeah,
okay.
What the hell?
Thank you, Ed. Essentially, what I've been working on primarily has been the Benny Goodman collection, which are on 10.5-inch reels that Russ Connor did everything on. Thank goodness, two-track mono or stereo. One of the problems is he was a typical collector in the sense that when he did something that was in one direction, what did a typical collector do? Instead of leaving it tails out, he'd wind it fast wound back up onto the original reel. So I've been tight-winding a lot of tapes. He also used a high-acid leader tape that had to be taken off and used an acetate-based splicing tape that needed to be repaired. And in certain instances, too, he was using plastic large hub slotted reels, which I have to replace with NAB standard hubs and reels so that we get rid of any of the deformation. Generally, the sound on his recordings were as close to the originals as possible. He had access to a lot of very interesting people. In fact, some of the notes he would put in say, BG never had this. because of his association with various collectors and engineers and personalities. And what Vinny and I came up with is a couple of interesting short excerpts. The first one we want to play is essentially something that this year will be celebrated on August 22nd, the 75th anniversary of the birth of swing. Vinny, would you kind of tell us what happened that day?
Yeah, this is actually the second night of the engagement at the Palomar Ballroom from August 21st, 1935. Without going through a whole long story, the Benny Goodman's orchestra was one of the bands featured on the Let's Dance program, a National Biscuit Company. And after that, they went out on a tour, a countrywide tour, East Coast to West Coast. And if you watch the Benny Goodman story, that horrible movie, this part is, I guess, kind of true. They were having a hard time as they were going across country, and a lot of gigs just weren't what they expected them to be. People wanted to hear sweet music for the most part, whereas Benny was playing this sort of swing, hot stuff. And so in a lot of cases, he had to shelve those things and play stock arrangements or whatever as he's going cross country just to make these ballroom people happy. Except when he got to the West Coast, he had a fan base, and that was primarily due to the fact that the Let's Dance program, which aired at 11 o'clock on the East Coast, aired at 8 o'clock on the West Coast, so people were listening to it, and they were ready for the band. So when the band hit at the Palomar, people were happy to hear them, and so he pulled out his good stuff and played his good stuff, and they went wild. You know, it was great music. One of the tunes that he played is, I guess we're going to play it. It's an arrangement by Fletcher Henderson, who did a bulk of the arrangements. He didn't do all of them. There were other arrangers, Bud Murphy, Benny Carter, also contributed early arrangements to the band. But the Fletcher Henderson things are the ones everybody talks about. And this is one of them. It's What a Little Moonlight Can Do, featuring his vocalist at the time, Helen Ward. So this will be interesting for a number of reasons. First, you're going to hear the opening theme, which is actually the closing theme. Most people know it as his closing theme. Goodbye is the name of it. But for some reason, it's opening this particular broadcast. I don't know why. I guess Let's Dance wasn't ready yet. I don't know what happened. But anyway, it opens the program. You hear the announcer, and then he goes into the tune. Krupa is overplaying on drums, as he normally does. Helen Ward does get a chance to sing, but she's fighting the band all the way. Jess Stacy is overplaying on the piano, and yeah, it's just unfortunate. But it's a nice arrangement. It's a nice performance. It actually was recorded in 1953 by the Goodman Band. He didn't record it. It was in the books since 35, but he didn't record it until 1953. So here's a very early version performance of What a Little Moonlight Can Do.
Right. Well, let me just add in that I did a conflagration. In other words, you'll hear the opening, the announcer, and then I kind of like go out of it and into the announcements for this piece.
Right.
According to what Connor said, this tape was a direct dub from an air check he found from someone in Los Angeles, whichever, what year you're in. And he said it was superior to any pirate LP that had been put out at the time.
Right. So while you might have heard this, this will be the first time you're going to hear it sounding this good.
Yeah, well, also the fact that after I spent about an hour or two cleaning it up and also re-equalizing so that at least you can finally hear Krupa's side drum come in.
Right.
Why don't we go to track one?
Yeah, let's hear that track.
In the West, we present the swing music of Benny Goodman and his orchestra with singers Helen Ward and Joe Harris. The program is coming to you direct from the Palomar at 2nd Street and Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles. What Little Moonlight Can Do, featuring Helen Ward.
Swing, folks.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Well, according to the movie.
Yeah, swing before that, believe me.
Right.
Anyway, hit the next one. That's your man.
All right. Well, of course, you know my love is classical music, so going through this, I found a couple of gems that I wanted to play you. On January,
and I let him.
Yeah, he allowed me. We had a few more, but he allowed me. January 24th, 1939 was one of the regular Camel Caravan broadcasts that Benny Goodman was signed up in 1936 to do every Tuesday nights over CBS. And then what happened is in the fall of 39, they went to NBC and wound up doing it Saturday nights, if I'm correct. And starting in 39, Johnny Mercer, the famous songwriter, joined the cast and would sing songs. They even created the Ziggy Elman.
The Frolic and Swing.
Which became he wrote the lyrics to
And the Angels Sing.
Yeah, and you can actually hear in the broadcast they play it, and Johnny Mercer says, "All right, I'll come up with something in a couple of weeks." And it was actually quite amazing that they were doing broadcasts going out as far as Midwest to Minnesota every Tuesday night live. So I found something that I thought was quite unusual. This was issued on an LP, but not in very good sound, but they didn't include the opening commentary. Now, let me just set this up. The artist on it was, of all people, Joseph Zaghetti, the renowned concert violinist. And Benny Goodman explained that it was like a week or two earlier, he and Zaghetti gave the premiere of a Bartok piece at Carnegie Hall, and you could tell from the way Goodman's talking that Joseph Zaghetti became his mentor, like a father figure to him. And he wanted him on the show, and he came on and played, I think it was Claire de Lune or The Girl with the Flaxen Hair, I can't remember. And then, of course, they decide, well, he's got to play with the band, so there's a setup here. But before we do the setup, I have to explain something. Mr. Mercer and Mr. Goodman were not very good at reading their lines, and they came up with something called the flub box. What was the flub box? Every time they made a flub, they had to take a silver dollar and throw it into this can. By the end of a certain period, they kept the count of it. They were up to something like 18 or 20 bucks.
And you always heard the coin going into the can.
You heard the clink.
You know, the clink.
Each one had to put their coin in, and you could imagine, you know, the stories about Goodman being such a tightwad, him standing there taking a dollar out and throwing it in the box and never seeing it again. Well, that was another thing. So what happens is it's very funny because, I don't know if you know Joseph Zaghetti, if you ever heard him, a very thick Hungarian accent. And they have him play it up perfectly. Mercer does it. there's a flub in there that Goodman does, and Mercer will say, here, I'll take care of it. And you hear it go clink. And just before they start, Mercer makes a mistake. He makes a flub. And just as the piece starts, you'll hear the clink again. In other words, he's dropping the coin in.
Right. So it's not part of the music.
It's not the music. I thought it was a mistake, and I said, wait a minute, dope, leave it in. That's Mercer throwing the coin in. So this is from January 24th, 1939, over the CBS network. It's Stomping at the Savoy with Joseph Sigeti solo. This, if I'm correct, has a solo in it, yes. This also, if I'm correct, came from the Johnny Mercer collection that Jack Towers had transferred at one point. Okay. So this is his transfer that I worked on and cleaned up a bit. Right. Can we have the next track, please?
Yep.
Order, please. It's time now to bring back our eminent guest member, Joseph Sigeti. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
You're elected, Joseph.
You know, Mr. Sigeti, I sure enjoyed myself down there at Carnegie Hall, listening to you with your wonderful violin while Benny took a few licks off his licorice stick. Certainly rolled those carriage trade jitterbugs in the aisles.
Oh, those people, Mr. Mercer, were lovers of legitimate music.
Ah, legitterbugs. Now, Mr. Sigeti, I'm secretary here, and one of our rules, just made it up out of my own head, is that any guest member of your distinction has to go through a special initiation.
Well, that's right, Joseph. You and your fiddle will have to help us bat out a little boogie-woogie.
What?
Boogie-woogie, Mr. Sigeti. Little thing Bach never thought of. And as for your friend Debussy, who set dreams to music, it would have given him a complete set of hand-colored nightmares.
Don't be afraid, Joseph. It's just good, clean fun.
Flop.
Oh.
This one's on me.
I run a fiddle part in Stomping at the Savoy a la Boogie Woogie. Joseph, you're it.
It'll hardly hurt at all, Mr. Sigeti, and you'll be a full... Flop. Full-fledged member of Benny Goodman's Hot Club. Send it up, boys.
About that piece is Lionel Hampton's on Vibes playing with the full band. He didn't do that too often, but here's a case of it happening, at least a live performance of it. What's the next?
Next thing, another classical piece based on classical music, but not exactly. One of his biggest hits, which was premiered on Camel Caravan, and they made a successful record, was Bach Goes to Town by Alec Templeton, which is part of his Hurdy-Gurdy suite, as arranged by Henry Brandt. A little later on, they went to Templeton, and he came up with another piece called Mozart Matriculates. They didn't make a commercial record of it, and the performance we have here was never published.
No.
It is, in many ways, I think, even more inventive than the Bach Goes to Town, because he takes a theme that's not exactly Mozart, changes it into Mozart with a little bit of a boogie-woogie into it, and then he adds in licks that sound like they're coming out of Don Giovanni, the clarinet concerto. And it just keeps building that it goes from something like a little bit of a small ensemble into a toy trumpet, almost into what you would call a village band of the period that Mozart would have heard in the street. Mm-hmm. And it's really incredible. And Benny sets the whole thing up. And this is from June 13th, 1939, another Camel Caravan, also broadcast from New York City over the CBS network.
They're not issued, as far as I know.
Right.
Alec Templeton and Henry Brandt. Most of you know that Alec is the brilliant young British composer who gave us Bach Goes to Town. Henry Brandt orchestrated it and did a swell job of it. This new one is called Mozart Matriculates. And as Alec Templeton points out, this is not a matter of swinging the classics. He simply tries to show for fun how great composers might have enjoyed writing for a swing band. In this case, it's Mozart, and here it is, Mozart Matriculates.
Imagine for 4 years straight being able to hear that every Tuesday or Saturday night. So it was absolutely incredible. Now I'm gonna introduce the next one, because this was something I called up and I said, Vinny, you're not gonna believe it. He said, what? According to what Russ said, this is the earliest stereo recording made in the United States of Benny. And I think it's actually the earliest stereo recording made in the United States that was recorded on magnetic tape. This is from the Blue Note in Chicago on August 28, 1952. You hear that, Mike? 1952. This was, according to what it was that there was a company called the Magnacord Tape Corporation. I think that was based out of Chicago. And they got permission from Goodman to record him at the Blue Note. And when you bought their stereo tape recorder at the time, you got a copy of some of these performances to show what stereo sounded like. And to think that at RCA Records, they didn't start recording until October of 53 in the test mode, and at Columbia, not until about 1956. So here we have an incredible example of what early stereo sounded like. Right. And it's the end of Avalon. Vinny, can you tell us
who's
in it?
Yeah. It gets us back to Benny doing what he, I think, does best, playing swing music, not classical music. And I think most of you will agree. And it's with his septet at the time, which included Don Elliott on trumpet, Terry Gibbs on vibes, Jimmy Lyons on piano, Don Roberts on guitar, Sid Weiss on bass, and Murray Feld on drums. And this will start actually after, I believe, Gibbs' vibe solo. We're going to fade it in right after that, and Benny will take it from there pretty much to fade out again.
Go ahead.
Oh, to the end. Thank you. vocal exhortations of Terry Gibbs.
Wanted to add in that this recording was made on what was called a staggered head machine. In other words, as opposed to what we have now, which is stacked heads left and right channel, they had separate heads for each channel. And apparently, wherever this tape came from was played back on a machine that had the proper space between the left and right channel, so everything stayed in sync. Benny, it is all yours now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was that was Benny from the 50s. I tried to pick things showing him from decades, 60s, 70s. 50s, 60s, and 70s. So that was the 50s. Here's the 60s. This was actually recorded at the Rainbow Grill in New York City in 1967. It's called Between a Devil and a Deep Blue Sea, and it was with his septet at the time, including Joe Newman on trumpet, Zoot Sims on tenor sax, Bernie Lighton on piano, Attila Zola on guitar, George DeVivier on bass, and Joe Marshall on drums. And this stuff, a lot of this material was actually issued on the Music Masters label, the stuff that Yale had in their archive. But for some reason, there is a Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea issued, but it's not this one. So I don't know what happened there. So this is the first time you're going to hear this. And it's, again, just an excerpt. Binningham is the first soloist, and I'll just fade it after that.
Thank you.
to hear, when he played live, he tended to fluff notes sometimes. He didn't care. He took a shot, and if it worked, fine. If it didn't, who cares? Right, there you go. But I like the fact that he takes chances when he's playing live. This last thing is another live thing, actually. It was done in Europe, in Stockholm. And it was during a time in the 70s where Benny was leading a group of European musicians, English mostly. They were assembled to take a tour of the continent, presenting 15 concerts in 8 countries in less than a month. Benny was very impressed with the musicianship of these guys, and a lot of the stuff was issued on the London label, but this one didn't make it, and you'll hear why. There's numerous squeaks and stuff in it, but it's great. It's the excitement that's on this thing is just fantastic. It's a quintet, not the full orchestra, and it's Benny Goodman with Bill McGuffey on piano, Bucky Pizzarilli on guitar, Lenny Bush on bass, and Bobby Orr, not the hockey player. He's a Scottish drummer, and this is Airmail Special, which Benny always announces Airmail Special Delivery for some reason, but it's Airmail Special, and it's with the quintet, and we're going to fade it after his first solo, and then it'll fade up again. It's all on the place.
Just play the
play
track
it through. So that way you just hear mostly Benny, but the ending is great because they're all interacting and everything. So
tell them about what he does in the beginning.
Oh, well, they'll hear it. They'll hear okay. it. The beginning's kind of cute, so... Those are just some of the many gems in the Benny Goodman collection. Now we're going to hear what's in the Benny Carter collection from Mr. Ed Berger.
Thank you, Benny and Seth. And I'm not sure, Benny Carter certainly wasn't a household name, as was Benny Goodman, so I'm going to spend a couple of hours running through a chronology of his career, and then we'll play some examples. Just to quickly go over the salient points of his history. He was born in 1907. He died in 2003. Well, we'll be a little more specific than that, I guess. He was one of jazz's most important creators, who made so many contributions in such a varied number of areas that it was almost hard to identify him as any one thing. As Duke Ellington once wrote, the problem of expressing the contributions that Benny Carter has made to popular music is so tremendous that it completely phases me. So extraordinary a musician is he. As a soloist on alto saxophone, he was the model along with Johnny Hodges for his instrument until Charlie Parker came along in the 40s. He was nearly unique in his ability to double on trumpet. As an arranger, he helped chart the course of big band jazz, and his compositions like When Lights Are Low and Blues in My Heart have become jazz standards. He also made major contributions to the world of film and television as one of the first African-American arranger composers to penetrate the Hollywood studios. And he was a guiding force in the integration of the previously separate black and white musicians' unions in Los Angeles in the early 50s. After nearly 30 years in the Hollywood studios in the 1970s, Benny Carter returned to full-time playing. And he enjoyed a second career as a jazz star, traveling worldwide until he, quote, retired from touring in 1998 at the age of 90. He died in 2003, a month before turning 96. In later years, his contributions were publicly recognized. He received the Kennedy Center Honors, the National Medal of Arts, several Grammys and honorary doctorates from Princeton, Harvard, and Rutgers, I'm proud to say. We call those the big three, Princeton, Harvard, and Rutgers. And we have his, in our collection at the Institute, we have his degrees, honorary doctorates from Harvard and Rutgers, and I'm proud to say the one from Rutgers is about twice the size of the one from Harvard. Aside from the quality of his contributions, the longevity of his career was equally astounding. And this is really probably the wrong place to make this pronouncement that I've been making for several years now, but here goes, because somebody here will dispute it and will have the knowledge to dispute it. But I believe that Benny Carter may be the only artist to have recorded in each of nine separate decades, from the 1920s into the new millennium. Somebody will undoubtedly challenge. Well, that's will come up afterwards, and you can give me a list of 30 names of people that did them. Also, he may have been the only musician to have made an acoustic recording, you know, through the horn, and lived to surf his own website. On a personal note, I had the chance to get to know Benny Carter, as did Vincent and our director of the Institute, Dan Morgenstern, and I worked with him on a variety of projects over a 30-year period. And I'm sure Vinny and Dan will agree that as great a musician as he was an even greater person. So let's get to some music and start off with a little musical illustration of just how he continued to develop and how long his career was. This is not from the Mellon Project, but we will get to some of those, including something by Louis Armstrong that I don't think anyone's ever heard before. But this is a sample of his first extended alto solo from 1929 from I'd Love It by the McKinney's Cotton Pickers. And we'll segue into his last recorded alto solo from 1996 on Green Dolphin Street. And the amazing thing is not just that these performances were done some 67 years apart, but that the latter one is clearly by the same musician. But it doesn't sound the least bit dated, because Benny was always listening and absorbing and continued to evolve as a musician. So if we can have the first track. So now we'll move to some of these great things we've been discovering.
Let me just interject. It'll be the only time I interrupt Ed. You heard Benny Goodman, the king of swing, supposedly. Carter was leading a swing-type band, or at least, what, 2 years before Benny made his big triumph at the Palomar?
Well, he started leading a band in 1928.
Well.
But, yes, his first major big band was 32.
Right, and he was one of the architects of the swing thing, really. I mean, especially his writing for saxophones. Fantastic. Sorry.
No, any time. You know, so he was also before Fletcher Henderson arranged for Benny Goodman, Benny Carter was the first arranger he turned to for his Let's Dance broadcast in 1934. Anyway, let's get to some of the stuff we've been finding with the Mellon Project. In the Carter collection are about a dozen 12-inch lacquer discs of broadcasts from Harlem's legendary Savoy Ballroom, where Carter's big band enjoyed several residencies during the period from 1939 to 1940. And this one's a Carter composition and arrangement and features him on alto at the beginning and trumpet at the end. And in between are solos by Tyree Glenn on trombone and Eddie Haywood on piano. This is called I'm in the Mood for Swing.
Benny and the boys let the title of this next one speak for itself. In the Mood for Swing. ¶¶
We're going to move to 1947 and an air check from the Bocage Hotel in Los Angeles, taken from a 10-inch disc. And around this time, Benny Carter was doing a lot of work with Nat King Cole. And here he sits in with the King Cole Trio. It's Oscar Moore on guitar and Johnny Miller on bass. And this is an air check of Cocktails for Two. And Nat King Cole introduces the performance.
For something the guest is very warm on.
Relax, Nat. I'm reaching for that saxophone right now.
Well, in that case, Benny, the request is for a Benny Carter rendition of one of those old newies. It sounded good when it first came out in 34. It sounded even better the way you play it today. Cocktails for Two.
Thank you.
to 1953 and another air check. This is from a Jazz at the Philharmonic concert in Tokyo, the first of many visits that Benny made to Japan. And what's interesting about this is that after playing a brief introduction on alto, he suddenly switches to trumpet. And Benny Carter always said the trumpet was his favorite instrument, although after the 1940s, he only played it sporadically. And this is one of only two occasions I've been able to find where he plays trumpet with Jazz at the Philharmonic. And I actually played this for him after we found it once in one of his closets. And he couldn't believe he had the nerve to do this because he said, I must have been out of my mind to get up on a stage standing next to Roy Eldridge and Charlie Shavers and hold a trumpet. And here he's backed by Oscar Peterson and Gene Krupa, and it's Indiana.
ついにベニー・カーターがアルトサックスをトランペットに持ち替えて演奏します。インディアナ。
Mr. Fuji will translate. He was right. Benny was a prolific songwriter in a variety of idioms, and in the Carter collection we found many demo discs of his songs occasionally sung by him. And here's one probably from the late 40s or early 50s, written by Carter with lyricist Paul Vandervoort, who was a frequent collaborator. And on some of these, Carter accompanies himself on piano. I don't think he does here anyway, but it's him singing, and this is excerpt from something called Time and Place, which was never recorded in any other time or any other place.
And he wasn't a great singer.
It's the time, it's the place, it's the proper mood. I'm the guy and you're the girl. There's a time and a place for everything. So let's give love a whirl. It's the hour, it's the sight for a sweet embrace. You're the queen and I'm the king. There's a time and a place for everything. So let's give love a fling. There's a time for work and a time for play and a time for making love. There's a place to learn and a place to earn, but the place I'm thinking of is the place in your arms where I'll spend my time. That's the thing I want to do. There's a time and a place for everything, and my time and place is with you.
In the interest of time, speaking of time and place, Al, if you could put in that supplementary disc and cue up 2 and 3, that'll save us a few minutes. It's a little complicated. I have my examples on an Edison Diamond disc, so it's a little difficult to maneuver, but I'm sure he can do it. One of the most significant discoveries in the Carter collection was a large component of reel-to-reel tapes and discs containing soundtracks for which he arranged, composed, and or orchestrated, beginning with Stormy Weather from 1943, including The Snows of Kilimanjaro, to television series like Ironside, The Name of the Game, The Bold Ones, and the two with which he was most associated, M-Squad and Bob Hope's Chrysler Theater. And in addition to having to fight racial prejudice in Hollywood, Carter also struggled against the stereotypical connection between jazz and crime. Whenever there was a police chase, a murder, or some seamy side of life depicted, there was always the, you know, saxophone, bluesy saxophone, often played by Benny Carter. Moreover, Carter, as other film composers, both black and white, coming out of a jazz background, he was stereotyped as a, quote, jazz composer, and although he had proven himself capable of writing in all idioms. So we're going to hear just a couple of brief excerpts from two episodes of Ironsides, just showing the kind of varied writing that he was capable of and was called upon to do in Hollywood. So this is tracks 2 and 3. Okay, well, let's try 3 and 4. Yeah, that should be it. You'll hear the studio announcement. And there should be one more. Sometimes they had to cue it up right to some specific short segment of action on the series. Right. So that's an example of what Benny did in Hollywood for almost 30 years, a lot of it not related to jazz at all. We can go back to the first one again and track 8. The collection includes a lot of tapes of Carter's work in the studio as both player and arranger, including many session tapes of his work for Pablo and later Music Masters in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. And here we have something by the incomparable Sarah Vaughan. In 1979, Benny was asked to arrange and conduct a recording session with devoted to the music of Duke Ellington, featuring Sarah Vaughan. And due to an unfortunate set of circumstances, none of these tracks ever saw the light of day. But Benny had a tape of the session. And as you'll hear on this, the reason it wasn't issued had nothing to do with the music, which is really great. So here's Sarah Vaughan with a beautiful orchestral setting by Benny Carter, who also conducted the orchestra on In a Sentimental Mood.
Of every kiss. In the sentimental bliss, you made my paradise. You make my paradise, paradise complete. Rose petals seem to fall. It's all like a dream to call you mine. To call you. You made this night a thing divine. In a sentimental mood, I'm within a world of show I have on me. For I never dreamt that you'd be loving sentimental. Be loving, sentimental, sentimentally. Rose petals seem to fall.
I really hate to fade that, but I want to get in a couple other things. So I mentioned about Louis Armstrong, and since we're in New Orleans, we have to play something by Louis Armstrong. This is kind of a preview. Dan is going to be doing more of Louis on Saturday morning, but in the Carter Collection, there was a reel-to-reel tape sent by Louis Armstrong to Benny Carter. And what happened here was that Benny and a producer named Sid Culler, who is probably best known to jazz fans if he's known at all, as the collaborator with Duke Ellington on Jump for Joy, writing the lyrics, I think. And they had written a song for Louis to sing on an upcoming appearance on the Flip Wilson show. And this is a tape of Louis learning this tune in his hotel room in Los Angeles after having lunch with Carter and Culler. Most of the tape, however, is Louis telling off-color jokes and reminiscing and occasionally having a stab at the song, which is called Integrate the Love. And this is one of the worst songs ever written. Carter was less to blame because he only did the music. Sid Culler wrote the horrible lyric. And so we'll hear a few sample excerpts from this hour-long tape. It starts off with an off-color joke, then an anecdote about Louis returning to New Orleans for a visit and all his friends ending up sticking him with the bill for all the partying. And then you'll hear a brief excerpt of the demo of the song sung by Sid Culler. This is truly atrocious. And then Louis's own attempt at singing it himself. Even Louis couldn't save it, but he comes awfully close. And then it closes with Louis Armstrong apologizing to Sid Culler and Benny Carter for messing up their song. So this is called, what's it called? Integrate the Love. Yeah. From 1968, and you'll know the lyrics reflect the era.
My name Cass. Who nuts were made of brass. He clanked them together, and they played stormy weather, and lightning shot out of his ass. And the cats, they meet me, like we used to go. I used to arrive in New Orleans. All my cats would be at the station with a brass band and everything. I mean, a big brother, you know what I mean? Yeah. Take me down, living in Redita around the bar and open a keg of beer and everybody think we have a ball.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, I'd pay for the band, the beer, and everything. So what the fuck? We had a good time. That's greetings, Pops.
Yeah.
We gotta segregate the hate. We gotta integrate the love. We gotta cool the scene from coast to coast, below and up above. From hard hat mobs to effete snobs. We gotta publicize the pros. We gotta ostracize the cons. We gotta make it from the ghettos to the higher echelons. From baby's crib to woman's lib.
Ooh.
let me read it for you.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm no politician, and I don't believe in standing on a soapbox and beating up my chops. Music is my business, and to me, music means harmony. And speaking of harmony, here's a little something I want to lay on you. Do you want a better world? Do you seek a better life? Well, to make our dreams come true, here's all we gotta do. Baby, do you care? You got to segregate to hate. We got to integrate to love. We got to lay aside the iron fist and use a velvet glove. Don't tell every cat that's where that papa is it. We got to maximize the truth. We got to minimize the lies. We got to judge a man by what he is. What is that? Not color, trees and size. Is that right?
Right.
It would be nice, like paradise. Do that, oh, and look around, and you will find. Well, Sid and Benny, we're sorry that we messed up your song with a capital F. But you know what I mean, no fools, no fun. Laying all jokes aside, I want you to know we got this song covered.
I think on that note, we might as well, and you can't do better than Louis Armstrong. So thank you all, and thanks to...